Fighting for America.
Hamas doesn't care about the civilian population in Gaza. They embed themselves in civilian areas. They use hospitals and schools and mosques. They want those civilians' deaths.
Fighting for Idaho.
And the Harry Reid Senate's become a factory for show votes, where votes are made that are more interested in winning votes for Democrats in November elections than they are for winning jobs for the American people. That's become the norm.
Fighting for you.
It's one thing to listen to people and to talk with them when you're a candidate for a position. Now, I think that we might have a qualitatively different conversation. I want to listen first before trying to give my views.
Voices, Mr. Right, Kevin Miller in the morning.
We need to look out for one another, and that's what we try and do here each and every day.
On 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Kevin Miller in the morning. Thank you all for joining us. Hope you're having a good drive in. Going to be another hot one today. And let me just say to the farmers, the ranchers, to people working construction, what a road construction in particular, what a thankless job. But for what it's worth, from your favorite pinkish, plump, bell pepper-shaped talk show host, I appreciate your work. And I mean, if you're working outside, man, big ups to you. Men, women, if you're playing, if you're trying to keep up with the kids, the children's, man, God bless you. Make sure you drink plenty of water, wear the sunscreen. You don't need me to tell you that, but I'm concerned because I look at the sun and wilt. Joining us now, a real American, Ken Ivory from the American Lands Council, Representative Ivory from Utah. Good morning, sir.
Hey, Kevin, good to be with you. I don't know that I've ever heard anybody described as pinkish, plump, and bell peppered shape, but I think I learned a little too much.
Well, that's what people here in Idaho get each and every morning, a little too much information.
Good to be with you, Kevin.
Well, sir, we take a look at the battle for the lands. We have some elected officials saying great. We have others saying not so well. How goes it?
You know, it's going very, very well. We've got six states now that are engaged in various legislative actions to work toward the transfer. This is a big effort, Kevin. You know, I mean, this isn't something that's going to happen overnight. You know, Idaho, you've been 130 years in the making getting to this point. Utah, 120 plus years. Nevada, even more than that. This is a big issue. It's probably one of the biggest real estate transactions in the history of the world. And yet, it is the only solution big enough if we're going to pass on to our children the protection of liberty and property and self-governance, which is the only equation to get to peace and prosperity. So we can ignore it and say it's too hard. And, you know, Martin Luther King said the soft-minded man always fears change. He feels security in the status quo and has an almost morbid fear of the new. For him, the greatest pain is the pain of a new idea. But what's happening in Idaho and in Alaska and in Arizona and New Mexico, in fact, I'm in Texas right now, we've got eastern states coming on board to do resolutions supporting the transfer. But what's happening is as the people are hiring and inspiring and demanding of their leaders, whether in office or seeking office, demanding that they answer for why the federal government's not honored the same promise to Idaho, hearts and minds are changing.
Well, let's get back to this, Ken Ivory, here at 580KIDO. Are you worried about the concept of liberty, freedom, and self-determination being eroded with the expansion of the federal government, not only in lands, but in every other aspect of our life?
Oh, my gosh, yeah. And so there's nothing more fundamental than property, right? Supreme Court Justice, early 1900s, George Sutherland, he's the only Supreme Court Justice from Utah, said man has three great rights, life, liberty, property. They're so interconnected as to be a single right, because if you give a man his life but take away his liberty, you take away all that makes life worth living. If you give him liberty but take away the property, which is the fruit and badge of his liberty, you still leave him a slave. And in the western states, we really are enslaved. We're politically in the back of the bus. We're never going to compete in the halls of Congress because we've been restricted to this artificial political reservation. And it really is fundamental. So you get these galvanizing ideas like the lands issues, like the federal funding issues, and you start getting states working around these galvanizing issues, it really has a much bigger impact on the overall issues you're talking about that get to liberty, property, self-determination on a whole number of fronts.
A very counter movement to the arrogance of the federal government just proclaiming massive amounts of lands, national monuments, like what happened to your state in Utah with Clinton, and of course what we fear with the Boulder White Clouds here in Idaho.
Yeah, you know, the Grand Staircase Escalante that you're referring to with Clinton, their own reports, they had emails from Kathleen McGinty. She was the director of the Council of Environmental Quality for President Clinton. Her own emails were saying, this does not warrant designation. It doesn't meet the environmental impact statements. It would never pass. We've never done a monument of this size by simply presidential declaration. But it was done as a sop to a political base, knowing that he wasn't going to win Utah anyway. Didn't talk to a single Utahn before declaring the monument standing in Arizona. 3 days before the declaration of the monument, Utah Senator Bennett went to Interior Secretary Bruce Babbitt and said, hey, we're hearing rumblings that something's up. Oh, no, don't worry about that. There's nothing going on. We'll talk next week. 3 days later, they designate the monument. That's what centralized management of our land looks like when you've got 530 members of Congress not from Idaho, when you've got unelected, unaccountable bureaucracy not from Idaho managing the lands who don't know the geography, geology, landscape, climate, culture, industry. That's what management looks like. Instead of having those whose lives and livelihoods depend upon the land, who are responsive managing the land. And that's what this is really about. And so people are getting that, Kevin. It's really exciting to see.
Ken, let's take a look at your website here, because I'm looking at it, AmericanLandsCouncil.org. And it's fascinating to see the map that you've put up here, and I'm trying to detail it to the folks, but you take a look at the situation, and it's like Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, all these other states that have, you know, limited federal government, Nebraska, South Dakota, North Dakota, and west of that, Montana, Utah, Wyoming. It's just such a different country.
Amazing. In the 12 western states, excluding Hawaii, which is interesting, Hawaii got all of its land directly granted to the state at statehood in 1959. With the exclusion of Hawaii, the federal government controls 1 out of every 2 acres in the western United States. We're not a self-governing state. We don't have a Republican form of government. We don't have those guarantees from the Constitution. We've been limited politically that we'll never compete in the halls of Congress with Ohio, that's a fraction of the size of Idaho. We've simply been prevented from doing that, no matter what the choices that people in Idaho may make. And so, you know, it's time that the federal government realized that, you know, equal footing was part of our Enabling Act. That was a promise that was exacted of every state being brought into the Union from Ohio forward. And in fact, Kevin, what's really fascinating on that map, when you think the federal government controls less than 5% of the state of the land in the states east of Colorado, Indiana, Illinois, Missouri, Arkansas, Louisiana, even Florida, were as much as 90% federally controlled for decades. They were making the same arguments we're making today. We can't educate our kids, you're controlling our land. We can't grow our economy, you're controlling our land. You're controlling all of our resources. We can't grow our economy, people are leaving our state for jobs. Same exact arguments. In fact, the historical documents are on that website. And yet they banded together. It took them 20 years. They banded together. They didn't have cell phones and trains and planes and Facebook. They banded together and compelled Congress to transfer the land. It's already been done.
Ken Ivory joining us from the American Lands Council. Can we get our lands back? Kevin Miller here at 580KIDO. But, again, going back to your website, AmericanLandsCouncil.org, and Utah, Nevada, Idaho, boy, I feel sorry for Alaska, all controlled by the feds. Is this just an acquiescence to the environmental wackos that the feds come in and just claim the territory? Why would they do it?
You know, there's a lot of reasons. In fact, I was just reading from 1803, St. George Tucker was talking about the land. I was reading that this morning, talking about the lands, and he was talking about these western lands, and people made the argument even back then, hey, maybe we should bank this land as a resource. It's just as good as having bullion in the bank. Well, I think originally the idea came that, you know, your land is arid. It may be tougher to dispose. Dispose is a bigger category than sell. Dispose means get rid of title. But they said, you know, it's arid. It's going to be a little harder to dispose. By 1932, the states had all come together and pushed and said, you've got to dispose of our land. Congress held congressional hearings granting remaining unreserved public lands to the states. But the agencies step in, the federal agencies step in and say, okay, we're going to give you all the land. We know it's a great national trust. We're, you know, the federal government's only a trustee of these lands since 1780. We're going to give you all the surface land. We're just going to keep all the minerals. Can you imagine, right? And so the Western state said, the heck you will. You got to keep the whole promise. You can't give us the skin of a squeezed lemon, Utah's governor, Democrat governor, said at the time. You've got to keep the whole promise. And so then they enacted the Taylor Grazing Act, which is the act that gave birth to the BLM. Very first line, Kevin, get this. Very first line of the Taylor Grazing Act says, in order to promote the highest use of the public lands, pending its final disposal. You see, that was the promise from 1780 all the way forward until Congress in 1976 said, hey, we have a new policy now. We're just going to keep these lands, and we're going to give you payment in lieu of the taxes you would get if we kept our original promise.
Ken, who's leading the charge in Congress to help out the West?
Well, there are a number of people beginning to look at it and stepping up. Your Congressman Labrador has been we've had some conversations with him. We need to dial in with him some more. Senator Mike Lee. We've got folks in Nevada, Congressman Amaday, folks in Arizona, Paul Gosar and others. We've even got folks east of Colorado, which is where I really think we need to go. But we're starting to really mobilize on that. We started out, the way to get there is education, negotiation, legislation, and litigation. Utah's appropriated $2 million to build the litigation effort as well. That education effort is starting very well at the state. Still a lot of work to do. Now we're starting to work toward Congress and having hearings and symposia and legal events and conferences in Washington where we're starting to get that effort out. Now we've got to start the lobbying effort on D.C. That's the very next step.
Now, we talk a lot, and I happened to be, I think, in Salt Lake City at the time when you had your big conference with state legislators. You had Speaker Betke. Has that progressed at all from the meeting of folks from all over the West?
Yes, we're going to have some follow-up meetings, in fact, in Alaska next week and the following week. We'll be meeting in Alaska at the Council of State Governments, doing some follow-up meetings there. And then we'll probably be having some follow-up conferences like the one that we had in April, probably around October is my guess, to start laying out the process of how do we work together to develop the education plan, to develop the negotiation plan, and move forward on the next steps of legislation. And then, critically, litigation. I mean, we don't have the luxury of time, I don't think. People are so frustrated, as you know, Kevin, around the West. People are so frustrated that, I mean, consider the Nevada situation, right? Whether or not that rancher owes the fee. I don't care if he owes it or he doesn't owe it. Set that aside. You had a federal agency come in with 200 men armed with machine guns and grenade launchers and tear gas and attack dogs and tasers to collect a fee, even if you assume that he owes the fee. That's unheard of.
Well, it was a miracle that no one was shot or killed.
Well, indeed, but that frustration is endemic. People are losing. In Utah, grazing has gone from 5.5 million to 1.2 million in the last 30 years. That's people's lives and livelihoods going away. We see that in timber industry. We see that with these waters of the U.S. types of things. Our way of life is really being threatened. And more than just the way of life, environmentally, these one-size-fails-all federal policies are destroying our forests. Our children may never know what forests look like. Because we're burning about 10 million acres a year, and it's going to take decades and decades for those to regenerate, and along with them, the wildlife that it's being burned in the millions, the habitat burned in the millions of acres, and the watershed being destroyed for decades. So these are issues that we're not going to have the luxury of sitting back and saying, God, I sure wish we'd have done something, because then we're going to have to live with that for decades. There's an environmental and an economic urgency that really, if we don't act, we're going to answer to future generations. Senator Mike Lee says that every time I talk to him. He says, I'm just haunted by the fact that we are going to answer to our children if we don't take control of this environmental and economic situation where we get back to liberty, property, self-governance.
More coming up with our great friend, State Representative Ken Ivory of the American Lands Council. Of course, he's a state representative in Utah. Do appreciate his time today.
Oh, give me land, lots of land under starry skies above. But don't
When you've got unelected, unaccountable bureaucracy, not from Idaho, managing the lands who don't know the geography, geology, landscape, climate, culture, industry, then that's what this is really about.
Must Hear Radio every morning with Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station. Don't
fence me in. Ken Ivory joining us from the American Lands Council, 580 KIDO. Ken, let's take a look at the ranchers, the farmers, the people that are the backbone, not only of the West, but of the country. What does this mean when the feds tell them where they can graze, where they can't? We had a chance to take the show to the Bundy Ranch. You talked about it last segment. But for people in Idaho that are worried about passing on the family farm or grazing, could they become an endangered species?
Well, it's happening. You know, like I mentioned in Utah, grazing AUNs, animal unit months, have gone from 5.5 million to 1.2 million in the last 30 years, just in Utah. I don't know the numbers for Idaho, but my guess is they're very similar. I'm hearing the same stories all around the West. Well, what does that mean? That means less food production. It means less tax revenue for the schools and for the communities. But it also means more of that grass just growing on the rangeland and becoming fuel. And the same situation in the forest, right? So there was one of your good commissioners, I think from Lemhi, Idaho, that said, you know, imagine you've got a pen that holds 50 head of cows, and you've got food and water for 50 head of cows, but you get this great idea and say, you know what, let's put 1,000 head of cows in there, and we'll just see what happens. Well, anybody with a lick of sense knows they're going to get sick and they're going to die. That's what's happening in our forests. We used to get paid. We used to get paid where timber companies would pay to go in and thin that forest, to tend that garden, if you will, and they'd have very systematic and specific instructions of, you know, you thin to this ratio in these areas on this time, and we get paid to thin the garden. Well, now we've got, you know, thousands of 1,000 trees per acre, you know, 800, 900, 1,000 trees per acre. They all are like straws in the ground, sucking up the same amount of water, fighting over the same nutrients, the same sunlight. They're just like those 1,000 cows in a pen for 50 cows. They're getting sick and they're dying. Beetle kill all across the West. And it's devastating, destroying our forests. In fact, there was an article a couple of weeks ago that said, if only Smokey Bear had grown up learning Indian lore. Because down in Arizona, you had the Apache Sitgraves National Forest right next to the Apache Reservation Managed Forest. The fire started right on the line. Burned 500,000 acres of the national forest, barely touched the reservation forest, because they use traditional forest management practices, they're saying, where they harvest trees, they utilize the timber, they take out the understory, and you're not having crown fires and catastrophic fires that are devastating, wiping out, killing millions of animals, and decimating the forest for generations. I mean, this is not rocket science stuff. People on the ground that know the land, whose lives and livelihoods depend upon it, they're more responsive, they're more responsible. That's all we're talking about, is certainly we're grown up enough as states to govern ourselves. We don't need the overarching superintending hand of those east of Colorado who know nothing of the geography, geology, culture to control our land policy for us.
Well, the battle continues. Anything we should be looking out for?
Well, what we look out for in the next session, we need people to mobilize to their elected representatives at every level and hire and inspire leaders to understand that, look, with $150 trillion in mineral value locked up in the western states, with forests being burned to the ground, killing millions of animals, with access being shut off every time they roll out a new federal plan, access is being shut off for hunting and fishing, grazing, as you mentioned, this is the only solution big enough, and it's fundamentally based in the constitutional equation, liberty, property, self-governance. So we need to give courage to our leaders, courage to your governor, your attorney general. Tell them this is the only solution big enough. We need you to battle for this solution, just like Thomas Hart Benton, that Democratic senator in Missouri, did in the 1840s and 50s, rallied all the states together, and they've already done this. So it's already been done. Promises are the same. Only solution big enough. We've got to get on American Lands Council, share the information there, get to your leaders, give them the courage to get it done.
Ken Ivory, the next time you're in country, you come up here sometimes. We'd love to have you come in studio the next time you're making an appearance here in Idaho. Just an open invitation.
I appreciate that, Kevin. I'd be honored to do that. Love your state. It is so absolutely beautiful.
Have a good one, sir.
Thanks.
All right, our friend Ken Ivory, state representative from Utah. AmericanLandsCouncil.org would love to hear from you. You're listening to Kevin Miller, 580 KIDO.
News.
A semi-truck hit a Wendell woman driving a pickup yesterday morning. She died.
Around 29 people were injured in this shelling, and an 8-year-old girl was killed.
Toxic chemicals produced by algae blooms in Lake Erie have led to an advisory against drinking and cooking with the water.
A base jumper died this weekend in the Snake River Canyon.
Just another manic Monday.
Making sense of a senseless world. Kevin Miller in the morning on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
And many of you are still on vacation. Enjoy it while you can. Remember, back to school starting very, very soon. Speaking of which, we'll speak with Kimberly Adams live from Cairo, Egypt in a minute. But first, we've got, well, you know, the president, the first lady, they care about you. They care about your health with Obamacare. They care about making sure that, you know, you're all happy and ready to go. And, you know, again, Mrs. Obama doesn't like people that are plump or anything of that nature. Well, get this. Apparently now bake sales as a fundraising tool may be out the window thanks to new restrictions from the Healthy Hunger Free Kids Act championed by the First Lady. That's right. And it's called, you know, again, that's part of her Let's Move campaign. The law overhauled nutrition standards affecting more than 30 million children. Among the changes, fatty French fries were out, while baked sweet potato fries were deemed to be fine. So anyway, the USDA is to set standards for all food and beverages sold during the school day, which includes vending machines, snack carts, and daytime fundraisers. So how does this influence bake sales? We'll get to that in a minute. First, we go to Cairo, Egypt, where we're joined by Kimberly Adams of Fox News Radio. Good morning, Kimberly.
Good morning, Kevin.
You know, I'm watching all the Sunday shows, and you've got the Palestinian guy, you've got the Israeli ambassador. The Egyptian perspective, has it changed at all when we're talking about the fighting going on? I know they had a proposal for a ceasefire. Israel appears not to be into it because of the numerous ceasefires previously broken by Hamas and the crew there in Gaza.
I think the Egyptian government is starting to realize just how little, how small of a role it's playing in this overall process, which is a stark contrast to the last negotiation back in 2012 for a ceasefire where Egypt played a pivotal role. But this new government has really bad relations with Hamas, the militant group in the Gaza Strip, and so hasn't been able to exercise very much leverage. So what instead they're doing is simply hosting a forum for the parties to negotiate with each other. Now, Israel has said that they won't show up, as you mentioned, but they have gathered over the weekend and into today various Palestinian factions, including the Fatah movement that runs the West Bank, to meet with representatives from Hamas and other groups here in Cairo in order to see if they can at least get a common perspective on what to take to the negotiating table.
Kimberly Adams, Kevin Miller here at 580 KIDO. What's the public perception like? Because we hear what Hamas is doing throughout the world. Is that having an impact within the region where you see the images of people being hurt, the innocent civilians? Or do people there, because they've been through so much, understand that Hamas is putting missiles there and Israel is protecting itself?
There's little sympathy for Israel at all in terms of protecting itself, because there's a very large sense of sort of Arab community, and people here who are Arab relate to the Palestinians on that level. But there is not much love here for Hamas either. People really dislike Hamas. They view it as a terrorist organization. And many of these Arab states are in a unique position on being on almost the same side as Israel on this, with Saudi Arabia, Egypt, and even some of the other countries, and just really disliking Hamas and wanting to see Hamas go away. But when you talk about public opinion, they are, Kevin, as you mentioned, looking at those pictures of women and children and civilians being killed in such high numbers. So even if they dislike Hamas, there's still much more anger and frustration towards Israel for what people here view as a disproportionate response.
And yet, Kimberly, we don't have the expected outrage because, as you said, Hamas is not liked, the Muslim Brotherhood is not liked in Egypt and in Saudi Arabia. So you have kind of this, correct me if I'm wrong, this covert, maybe not support of Israel, but not the usual, you know, chorus of condemnation.
I think you're absolutely right. I mean, you're probably not going to hear many of these Arab leaders coming out in strong support of Israel's efforts to get Hamas in the Gaza Strip. But at the same time, they're also, even Saudi Arabia's king came out condemning a strike on a UN school, but didn't condemn Israel outright, because for better or for worse, these guys want to see Hamas gone as well.
I think what is lost here is that the over 3,000 missiles that have been shot down by the Iron Dome, imagine, and I'm sure a lot of people in that region, including the Egyptian government, that don't have access to that. You talk about multiple tragedies and killings and innocent civilians, the images that we'd see if that Iron Dome hadn't worked.
Yeah, I think that would be a real tragedy. I mean, if you look at the number of civilians we've seen killed in Gaza, and knowing that roughly a similar number of weapons has been going back and forth, you know, then you have to imagine that the thousands of rockets Hamas has shot into Israel would have had a lot of damage as well. And I think it's been curse for Israel, this the success of the Iron Dome, because on the positive side, you know, Israeli civilians have been protected, but on the other side, you then see a number of civilian casualties on the Gaza side, with so many women and children being killed and civilians being killed in Gaza, and it's very hard to make the argument, well, that would have happened to us.
Indeed, at 580KIDO, are we looking at any type of solution? We've had these ceasefires, and as soon as that happens, Hamas gets in the tunnels and starts their shenanigans again, and Israel is done with that. The United States really doesn't have, at least from our perception, I don't know what the perception is there, have a lot of credibility within the region to force both sides to come together.
I think the perception here is that the United States has limited credibility to negotiate, but for different reasons. In the United States, and I know in the West, it's viewed that the United States is on kind of tough ground with Israel right now, with a lot of negative comments coming out of the Netanyahu government in Israel towards the Obama administration and recent condemnation of some Israeli strikes by the Obama administration. Here in this part of the world, the United States is not viewed as an impartial actor, because it's viewed as being too supportive of Israel and providing a lot of funding and weapons to Israel. And so neither side really views the United States as a good negotiator at this stage right now.
What about the other actor within the region, the government formerly headed by Crazy Mahmoud?
The Iranians have been very harsh and loud and vigorous in their condemnation of Israel, or as they call it, the Zionist entity, throughout this process, saying some, with the Ayatollah, they are saying some really awful things in his social media about Israel and the Israeli people. But at the same time, it does seem that Iran is going to continue, and they publicly say that they will continue funding and supporting organizations that are working against Israel. So they don't really try to hide the fact that they are supportive of Hamas and Hezbollah in Lebanon as well.
So I guess we're just going to have to stand by and continue the blowing up of the tunnels and everything else.
Well, yeah, absolutely. That's one of the things that is sort of moving forward. We did see over the weekend Israeli troops sort of withdrawing a bit to closer to the border between Gaza and Israel, and also limiting some of their ground operations to southern Gaza and the area of Rafah, because they do seem to be making some accomplishments in destroying this network of tunnels, which was one of their stated goals. And so it seems that if they can make the accomplishments they want to in that area, we may see an Israeli drawdown, at least of the ground forces, over the weekend. Even as those troops were pulling out, there was still a lot of aerial bombardment, as well as strikes from the sea and from positions outside of Gaza.
Kimberly, we appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, Kimberly Adams joining us exclusively live from Cairo, Egypt. That's right, Cairo, Egypt. Who else does that for you? Well, look, that situation is not going to get any better. And the Israelis, at one time, they counted 10,000 missiles from Hamas or rockets. Now they're down to about half that. But, you know, when we hear of the tragedies, and look, we're very blessed in America. We don't want to see little kids getting blown up. We don't want to see innocent civilians getting killed. But on the other hand, imagine if that Iron Dome didn't work. The Israeli casualties would be, what, 10, 20-fold? And then if you think they're mad now, would Gaza even exist? Think about it. Let's get you to traffic now at 580.
Ramsey, weekdays at noon. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
580 KIDO coming up, perhaps banning bake sales. Gotta love that. Tucker Carlson and Kirsten Powers get into it about immigration. It was so good, it's just an argument that we'll have to share with you. Let's go to O in Eagle at 580 KIDO with Kevin Miller. Hello, O.
Hey, good morning, Kevin. How you doing?
Living the dream, and you?
I'm doing the same, brother. I'm doing the same. You know, I quit my job, right?
You did?
Yes.
I know that wasn't, I didn't know if that was public, but go ahead.
Yes, absolutely.
You've quit your job, and you're a pretty big wig at your last job. You're a big star.
Well, thanks for saying so. But I was tired of working for the man, so now I'm looking for a new business model, and I've got a couple of ideas. Based on your story you're going to cover here in a few minutes, I'm thinking about becoming an illegal cupcake dealer. Think there's some potential in that? I see some serious upside.
Right. We're talking about the new standards for fundraisers and such at schools. However, how would you play that out? By the way, the new restriction, 6 chocolate sandwich cookies at 286 calories would be out, but a 4-ounce fruit cup with 100% juice and just 68 calories would make the cut, oh.
Yeah, how bad is our nation when the federal government's job is to police bake sales and so on instead of controlling our southern border from a wave of illegal immigration, which leads to my second business option. I'm thinking about getting in the transportation business down in Mexico.
How would that work, sir?
Well, I there's got to be some serious profit to be made there. Never mind.
And maybe you could feed them with some illegal cupcakes.
Or some chicharrones or something.
Now, you do bring up a very valid point here at 580KIDO. O Scott, by the way, the O Scott Show on YouTube and Facebook and everything else. But you do bring up a great point. We seem to care more about calories than we do our security, and never mind what's going on in the Middle East.
Yeah, it's a sad state of affairs, and all I can do to keep from crying is to just make fun of the whole thing.
Well, and that's really, and that's why you, the conservative comedian, we welcome your presence, because we can report the news, we can comment on the news, but nobody wants to, the news is so bad that you have to go, no one's doing anything. The president calls us haters.
Stop just hating all the time. Come on. Let's get some work done together.
That's a good laugh.
Well,
what I mean?
He acts like he's doing a stand-up routine if you listen to it carefully, but he's not funny.
Exactly, because there are so many people that are out of work, that are hurting, including you now. You've given yourself the boot.
Yeah, that's all right. I'm going to start a business, but it is a legitimate business, so there you go. I guess my other two ideas were just fantasies.
We hope to hear from you and whatever we can do to support you, my friend.
All right, thank you very much. Have a great day, Kevin.
All right, take care. O and Eagle, O Scott on YouTube. He's a nice young man that has a lot of creativity. By the way, the story that we are commenting about here is this issue involving restrictions on bake sales from the administration, talking about the new law. It was the 2010 Healthy Hunger Free Kids Act, championed by our own First Lady and her Let's Move campaign. The law overhauled nutrition standards affecting 30 million children. Among the changes, fatty French fries out, baked sweet potato pies are in, and your fries are in, and you're thinking, well, how does that impact us? Well, in Nebraska, apparently resourceful students from the Wall Street Journal, by the way, hawk pizza and cookie dough to raise money for school supplies, field trips, and the old annual eighth grade excursion to D.C. They peddle chocolate bars to help fund the yearbook. How many times have we not been hit with the chocolate bars at work, wherever else? I guess the only place you haven't been hit is at the gym. But apparently that's not going to happen this year. Campus bake sales are going on a diet. A federal law that aims to curb childhood obesity means that in dozens of states, bake sales must adhere to the new nutritional requirements that could replace cupcakes and brownies with fruit cups and granola bars. That just sounds like the state of Oregon to me, does it not? Just sounds, anyway, and Oregon, lovely people. A lot of friends in Oregon. Not really, but we'll just say that for entertainment purposes only. So, as you're pondering the day, as you're getting ready perhaps to go check out Larry Gebert at the 8th Annual Buckaroo Breakfast for the Caldwell Knights Rodeo, think about this. We can enforce the nutritional standards on food, but we can't enforce our laws when it comes to immigration and the border? What's up with that? Think about that for a minute. We can enforce the Calgary police, but the ICE and the INS, sorry. We'll talk more about that coming up, plus our friend Dave Petzo. It is 6:58, currently 76 in Caldwell at 580 KIDO. Kevin Miller in the morning. Last week, the biggest drop ever is Dave Petzo bearish on the market. What it means for you and your 401k. Next, Kevin Miller.
Serving Meridian.